Good morning and welcome to Conti's Law. I'm your host, Attorney Michelle Conti. This week, we're going to delve into the world of guardianship. Now, when people hear that term, they often think it deals with guardianship of a minor, which it can, in fact. Most of the guardianships that we're brought in to handle or assist with is guardianship of an incapacitated parent or loved one. So frequently, dad has some form of dementia, and maybe that power of attorney just isn't good enough, or maybe he didn't have a power of attorney, or the agent that he appointed isn't available, predeceased him. Maybe they're incapacitated themselves. We also deal with guardianships for special need individuals who are over the age of 18. And when we have those meetings, and we'll get into this a little bit more, but when we have those meetings, I tell the parents, just because they are intellectually disabled at some level doesn't mean that they can't make a decision for themselves. It doesn't necessarily mean we have to go to court and we have to get a judge to determine that that person is incapacitated. That's the last thing, I guess I should say, that we want to do. We don't want to have them deemed incapacitated if it's not necessary. So if we have them draft a power of attorney and they understand it, then that's more reasonable, because the burden or level is lower for somebody to draft that power of attorney than it is for them to create a will or a trust. So we also assist with the special needs community, but we've been having more and more grandparents, great-grandparents come in who are asking if it's necessary to get guardianship of a minor loved one. So maybe mom and dad haven't passed, which is typically what my clients think of. We'll use my husband and I for an example. We have 4-year-old twins. If we die in a common accident, or Jason dies first and then I pass away unexpectedly and my children are still minors, where I'm a Conti Law, and myself in particular, we're huge advocates that in your estate planning documents, you dictate your wishes as to who will take care of your child or children if they're minors upon your passing. But what happens if mom and dad haven't passed away yet? Maybe they're bad parents. Let's face it, they exist. Maybe they're drug addicts. I hear that more and more. Maybe they just don't want their kids, and you don't want to go through that adoption process. So we've been handling more and more guardianships for minors. And recently we dealt with two back to back. One, grandparents were seeking guardianship. Both parents were still involved. The second one, we had great grandparents who were seeking guardianship of a minor child with special needs. So it doesn't have to be one or the other. It can be both. It can be a parent with special needs, quote unquote, meaning maybe they have a form of dementia. Maybe they're on Medicaid. Maybe a partner, so a boyfriend, girlfriend. Maybe they didn't marry that person, but they're living with them and that person's taking advantage of them. So there's all different types of situations that can affect what our next step is. Obviously, we want to make sure that person is taken care of, and we'll do it in the best way possible. Meaning, if it doesn't have to go through court, then why force it? Why take the time and the cost? Also, with guardianship proceedings, we have this hearing. It's like a trial. There are witnesses. You get on the witness stand. You're asked questions. The incapacitated person, if they don't have an attorney for themselves, may be appointed a court-appointed attorney. We're going to have their doctors come in and testify. We may need letters of recommendation. There's a whole slew of information that goes into this process. It's not just, oh, I think Johnny needs me as his guardian, and have the judge sign it. There's a process, and then there's annual requirements. So each year, that person who's appointed the guardian of the person and the guardian of the estate, there's two different jobs. It may be the same person or company acting in that role. But each year, we have to then file with the court the annual requirements. There's annual reports. Things go into the process, I think, that people just aren't aware of. But I want to start at what having somebody deemed incapacitated actually means. If you're deemed incapacitated, this is a designation for an adult. What that means is that their ability to receive and evaluate information effectively and then communicate a decision based on that information, it's impaired to such a significant extent that they are either partially or totally unable to manage their finances or their medical affairs. Being deemed incapacitated is a big deal. So if you're over the age of 18 and you're deemed incapacitated, obviously you're presumed no longer to be competent in the eyes of the law. The biggest misnomer with a power of attorney or a guardian is the assumption that the person who's next of kin, so next in line, could be a parent of a child. It could be a child of an elderly person. It could be a sibling. It could be the spouse. They presume that they're automatically that person's guardian. But I'm here to tell you that's not necessarily always the case. First of all, the legal presumption is that everybody over the age of 18 is competent. If that presumption is to be dissipated, then we have to prove through this formal guardianship proceeding that they're not. But again, this goes back to it not being true that every person who's quote unquote incapacitated is in need of guardianship services. So Pennsylvania has guardianship law in place. And, oh, I don't know, maybe in the early 90s, mid 90s, Pennsylvania amended that guardianship law. First of all, one of the most important distinctions is that Pennsylvania made it very clear that somebody who is incapacitated doesn't necessarily need a full-time guardian. That's called a plenary guardian, when you need somebody there to make decisions full-time for you. If an alternative approach, so the least restrictive alternative, is available, that can be a power of attorney. That can be a trust document. Family supports. If they are sufficient to protect the interest of that person, then guardianship may not be necessary. Obviously, for that power of attorney to be valid, that person had to have the capacity to sign it in the past. Then we have to worry about HIPAA. So since HIPAA came along, hospitals and doctors are reluctant, and I can understand why, to provide medical services or to provide guidance to somebody who doesn't have legal capacity and they can't consent to the treatment. So in those cases, if somebody doesn't have capacity or a power of attorney, we may have to seek emergency guardianship with the court. And again, it may not be the next of kin that the judge is going to appoint or feel it necessary to be in charge of that person's affairs. So I mentioned that there's two different types of guardianship. We have guardianship of the person, which is making those decisions on that person's health or medical care. And then we have guardian of the estate. And if you relate the two, guardian of the estate has to do with like a financial power of attorney, being in charge of the assets and money. But it's not just as easy as you walk in and snap your fingers. There is a formal process required protecting the rights of that person who has the disability or incapacity. Now, just like a criminal defense attorney handles criminal matters very well, when it comes to planning for your estate, planning for your affairs, guardianship, not every attorney is created equal, folks. And I say that because if you would try to hire me, if you have been charged with somebody's murder, I am not the attorney you want to handle your criminal defense. And I say that because I don't practice in that area of law. So for an attorney who's not comfortable in this guardianship or orphans court realm or knows the process or what have you, a good attorney will tell you that. And so you want to seek somebody who has that experience and who knows, obviously, Pennsylvania's guardianship law. So we also have here in Pennsylvania with one of these amendments, the limited guardianship. And so obviously it is what it says it is. It limits that guardianship's role and capacity to act for you. Now, one of the questions I'm often asked is, can I appoint my own guardian? And the answer is no. Only a court who has competent jurisdiction can appoint a guardian for you. So a parent cannot, without that appropriate judicial oversight, appoint a guardian for an adult child. And even naming a guardian under your will require a court order to effectuate that guardianship. What I mean is, in my will, if I say that let's say my husband predeceased me and I want my brother to take care of my children if they're minors, that's great that I have it, and it's necessary to have it in your document because you want the court to know your wishes. Now, in my case, I only have one sibling, but let's say I didn't like him. I don't want the court to presume or make that assumption that I want my brother to raise my kids if I can't. Maybe I don't like him. Maybe I disagree with his way of life. And I want my best friend. Or I want my husband's brother to take care of my kids. Well, then the court needs to know that because, let's be frank here, once I'm gone, I can't tell the court my wishes. That's why it's important to get it in writing prior to your own incapacity or death. So it's important that my wishes are noted. And then whomever I name in my document, my executor, will be able to make sure that the court signs off. Now, when the court appoints a guardian, we have the guardian of the person, so that makes that person responsible for personal decisions of that incapacitated person, so the medical decisions. And then we have guardian of the estate. So that provides the authority over the financial affairs of the incapacitated person. If you have multiple parties, often I'll have grandparents jointly act as co-guardians. That's fine. We can list more than one responsible person in that role. But these are things that we want to make sure we notate. Or when we're petitioning the court, we have everybody listed. So that way down the road, if one spouse passes, the other spouse, in my case, the grandparents, so if grandfather dies, grandmother already is named. We don't have to go through this process again. I'm going to interject our contact information here. If you have questions, concerns, reach out to us. Feel free. We encourage that. Our number is 724-784-0239. And our website is www.contilawpgh.com. And all of our contact information you can find there. We offer complimentary consultations. We offer home visitations. So feel free to reach out to us. Any questions, concerns, or even topics that you would like us to cover in upcoming shows, just let us know. It's always nice to hear what my listeners are thinking or the questions that they have that I may have not thought of. So let's get back to guardianship. So what it means is for us to get guardianship, we have to petition the court. We file that petition asking the court to schedule the hearing date. Here's the circumstances. Once we have that hearing date, that incapacitated party may have court-appointed counsel for them. So the court will say, we want to make sure they have somebody advocating for their rights as well. Then we provide notice to all of the next of kin who are involved. We want to make sure everybody who should have notice is receiving notice. Now, keep in mind, we then have to get the doctors involved. If there's a medical or a psychological professional involved, we have to get our witnesses lined up. Do we need to subpoena somebody to come? Is there a parent who has a parental right who doesn't want the grandparent maybe to make decisions? Is there a sibling who doesn't want the sibling who's petitioning the court to make decisions? So that's why notice is very important. And let me tell you, I'll be the first to tell you, if you don't provide notice to the appropriate people and prove that to the court, they're not going to allow that hearing to continue. So it's important that you follow the process. Now, guardianship may be contested. Obviously, we prefer when it's uncontested because those proceedings generally are very straightforward. They involve brief testimony before the court. The medical statement is very clear, maybe provided to the court ahead of time. That's an uncontested dream guardianship. Maybe you're in and out in an hour. That's great. What happens, though, if you can't find the next of kin to give notice? I had somebody come in and say, well, we just pretend they don't exist. Well, unfortunately, folks, that's not how the law works, right? I mean, we have to follow the rules. And if the rules say paternal grandparents get notice, we need to give them notice. But let's say we can't find them. Well, obviously, if they're deceased, that's not an issue. We may have to advertise in a local newspaper. There's different processes we must follow. Let's say this guardianship is uncontested. What happens after the hearing? Well, the court will determine who the appropriate guardian is, and then they'll appoint them. The person with the disability, mentally, physically, it doesn't matter. They may or may not be required to attend the hearing. I've had kids, adult children, who are fantastic, who needed a guardian and came to court and they got on the witness stand and they had a really good time. And, you know, it was a very honest and real proceeding because it showed the judge all these parents wanted was the best for their child. We have other times that it's just not healthy or safe for that person to come to court for maybe medical reasons. Maybe it would cause more confusion. So these are things that we keep into account. But once the court makes their determination, then they'll sign the court decree ordering who the appropriate guardian is, if it's guardian of the person, guardian of the state, both. So that occurs. And then we have to follow the next steps. We're going to have to file a bunch of papers with the court. We're going to have to do inventories. We're going to have to do our annual reports. We're going to have to serve that incapacitated party. So there's a lot that goes into this process, more than what somebody may expect. But overall, in the grand scheme, it's really to protect and to preserve that incapacitated person and their assets. Now, what happens if a guardianship is contested? I have one going on right now that, you know, it's a shame. When I say death and money bring out the worst in people, well, this may trump that. And it's really a shame where contending factors, the parties don't get along. So kids want to see the best for their parent. Parents, significant other, doesn't like the children and disagrees with their decision on what to do for mom. And, you know, that would be one thing. But the other issue, and this case was years ago, but we had a guardianship of an adult special needs party. And there were 12 children, six on each side, six agreeing to one of the siblings, because mom and dad had passed, to be the guardian. The other six disagreed, and they wanted somebody else to be appointed. And so anytime you get attorneys and the court involved, and let's face it, this is a very emotional period where things may be said that they didn't mean. But we have to take all of that into account. Most of this, not all, but most, can be avoided with the proper planning strategies and techniques. But let's face it, sometimes we just need to go to court and have the judge decide. What happens if you don't agree with what the judge decides? What happens if the judge wants to appoint a neutral third party? What do we do then? Well, sure, you can appeal it. We can petition the court for a review down the road. But essentially, the court's going to do not necessarily what you, next of kin, think is best for mom or dad. They're going to do what's best for that incapacitated person, and it may not be appointing you. Now, what happens? I'm asked this quite frequently. What happens if that person who's the power of attorney or the guardian abuses their power? Now, again, I'd like to think if somebody abuses their power, they're doing so unknowingly. They're not doing it maliciously or with intent. But let's face it, sometimes that happens. If that were to happen, again, we get the court involved and we show the court why we feel X, Y, or Z has occurred. We don't like that it's occurred. We want somebody else. And it's the nice thing is the court obviously has that ability to do that. What people don't like is the time and the cost associated with court. Sometimes it just needs to be done, though. There are, and this is why it's nice, Pennsylvania wrote into that amendment, sometimes we don't need the court involved. That's perfect. But other times, it's just easier and cleaner. Let's have the judge make that final determination, and we'll go from there. But I don't want anybody to think it's a snap of the fingers, we walk through the doors, and it's done. It's a process. It's costly. My rule of thumb, and I tell every person I meet this opinion. They may agree. Other local attorneys may agree, may disagree. My opinion, if you take anything from this conversation, is that powers of attorney are the most important document you can have because they take care of you during your lifetime. What I mean by that is, Not that I don't care who gets your stuff when you pass or what they get. That will ultimately be worked out. I would hate for you not to have drafted up-to-date recent documents, financial power of attorney, healthcare power of attorney, saying who has the ability to make those legal decisions for you if you can't make them for yourself. And then that day come where you are incapacitated. Let's face it. I don't know the percentage of people who will end up with dementia or a form of dementia throughout their life, but it's high. Let's say you can't make those decisions for yourself. I would rather you have those documents in place that dictate who has the legal ability to make those decisions for you. Then you have to be forced to go through guardianship. It's costly and it takes time. That's the end of our show today. If you have questions, feel free to give us a call, 724-784-0239. Thank you and God bless.